So a small broadcast now from Colin Power regarding the nature of square root functions, which includes the square root of number I, and the density function of Aleph 0.5. So when we look at the number line, obviously 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, we're all quite clear on all of that, and every number has a square number. So if we square the number 2, we get the number 4, square the number 3, we get the number 9. Obviously, we say that 0 squared is not recognized by standard mathematics, but in our mathematics it is, just as 0 squared equals 0, so does 1 squared equal 1. But obviously there's a shift in dimension when that happens, and in the perspective of zero, it divides infinite number space into four, and from the perspective of the number one, it creates a boundary around that space, encapsulating all of the reciprocal numbers in a sense. Once we expand beyond square numbers, beyond that, we're really expanding reciprocal space, if you could think of it, and it goes through a certain number pattern up until we get to 100. And because we work in base 10, you could say that what the number 100 is 1 with 2 zeros, and we have a sequence now that goes from 1 to 100, which is 1 times 100, but it doesn't flow. If you imagine we're going like 1, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, we got to 2.5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, we get to 100. If we count down the sequence, they start from 1, 4, 9, 16, 25. That's the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th number, and then 36, 49, 64, 81, 100. That's the 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th number. So once again, it's that number 25. We've talked about it in our phi solution, and it's there again in the square numbers. When we go to the square roots, let's have a little look. Let's have a count through. You could say after the number 1, we had the number 2. So square root of 2 would be going the other way, wouldn't it? Yeah. So above the 4, we're going to put the 2, and we can put a square root beneath it, saying, hey, look, you can go down, can't you? And it does. It kind of flows in a straight line, doesn't it, in a sense? Also, you should think, actually, it's a 45-degree offset, if you think about it. Because what we're really doing is, if you think about the combination of the number 1 and the square root of 2, the square root of 2 is really a diagonal to the square of 1. So that means, let's say we set everything off, we could put the number 1 and we could put the square root of 2 above it, couldn't we? When we get to the number 4, we find the square root of 8 is what divides the square. 9, suddenly we get to 18 dividing the square root of 18. And when we get to 16, it's the square root of 32. Oh, it's that 32 number again, isn't it, everybody? This time paired with the number 16. If we imagine 16 was the 7 and the 5. So I'm going to let you have a little think about all that. And then the next step, we move into the 25-50, which actually is, if you think about it, it's a quarter versus a half, really. If you think about the number 100, 50 is half of 100 and 25 is a quarter. So we've reached a very special point there at the square root of 50. We can say also square root of 5 is a function of 10. It's a function of 10, so we'd have to take that 50 divided by 10. So we could square that into 50 divided by 10 and get square root of 5, don't we? Yeah. So that's all phi stuff, and you can find out more about phi stuff from some of our other broadcasts. But for now, if we follow it up to its conclusion, what we're noticing is that there's a pattern here. 16 is doubling to 32 when we look at it as a square root of that function of the square. Yeah. So for example, 1 is doubled, 2 is doubled, isn't it? 1? Yeah, exactly. And we just put a square root in front of it and we found the diagonal. 4 doubled is 8. Yeah, and we put a square root, just a square root in front of it, just to signify it's changed direction. Yeah, but it's the number 8, isn't it? Just in a different direction. That's all, yeah? And so what we find is that square root function, or that sign of the square root, actually is a compression of infinity. That's what it actually is. That's what the square root function does. And how it compresses it? Well, it compresses it. If we imagine, on the one sense, we could say we're growing through square numbers, aren't we, here? And here we've got the root numbers, and it's a 1 to 2 ratio. So if we take that down, that'd be 0.5 to 1 ratio. Oh, there we have it. Yeah, density ratio, isn't it? Yeah. Everything is in density ratio then, isn't it? Yeah. So whether we look at something as being 1 density 0.5, Aleph 0.5 is just an example of density ratio, isn't it? Between the whole fractional numbers and the whole numbers. And here what we're seeing is we've got the square numbers have in exactly the same density ratio of 0.5 to 1 compared to the root numbers. And all we've done is all we have to do do is we just have to have the root number to change the direction. And in a sense, by changing direction, that's what doubles the number. Yeah? So what it has is we have, when we change direction, we're creating a second number line. That's right, we're rotating the number line, yeah. And it's creating a second number line. And that number line is double because we've doubled the number. We had one line before, we've rotated it, we've doubled the number of number lines that we have now, yeah. Ending, so now infinity doesn't end at infinity, it ends in a straight line, does it? It ends on a two-dimensional plane suddenly. And it's that transformation from one dimension to two dimension, which creates that pi function. So, what we're going to do now is we're going to have a little look back at the, just go back a little bit and just have a little bit of an examination then of what happens then just before the square root of 2. Because we've got 1 square root of 2. What about 0 doubled? It would be 0, 2, wouldn't it, yeah? And so the square root function then would be 0, 0, 2, yeah? Square root, yeah? Okay, so that's a little bit of a weird one for people. 0, 2, I know, yeah. But you can imagine we can split 0 into 2, yeah. That's right, we can have plus 0, negative 0. And so once we start to understand that we can have that concept with the neutral 0, which is what we find at the center of the atom, you know, the proton and the neutron configuration. Neutrons don't have a charge, yeah, protons do. And at the same time, we have negative electrons. So, you know, it's an atomic composite, and that's what we're looking at with fourth dimension. So we have a negative zero, positive zero, and a zero zero. And so that's what we're looking at there. We can divide those. In other words, divide zero into two. What we get is positive zero, negative zero. We're dividing nonpolar zero into negative positive. And therefore, what we do is when we put the square root of one above it, what we're saying is we're recongealing the two, aren't we? We're going from a squaring, if it was a squared zero, let's say we've squared zero and made a cross, what the square root of one is doing then is it's collapsing the zero. It's collapsing that number line back into a line. But as it does so, what we're doing is we're actually rotating, we're opening up one line at 90 degrees, and when we're collapsing it, we're saying, well, which one is collapsing into which one? We don't know. And so there's a 50% chance it could be collapsing one way and a 50% chance it could be collapsing the other way. That's a probabilistic chance, isn't it? Yeah. And it will go down to what is the number at the end of infinity when it reaches, which is, in causality, is limited by the number 3. But when we talk about in numerical space, we have ordinals that limit that sort of thing. And so we see that in the ordinal space, that happens in the negative first, and it swings around in an anti-clockwise. And therefore, when we collapse that one, it will swing back, and it will continue collapsing in the anti-clockwise direction. If we've labeled our, you know, number line with the plus on the right side and the negative on the negative side, it swings around and it collapses back round. And that's where we get something called the unit circle when we apply the square root of I into the complex number plane. And so if you think about it, this solves the Riemann hypothesis. So this is our solution to the Riemann hypothesis, or part of it, is that as the square root of one is a, if you like, an opening and collapsing of space, numerical space. It's opening the zero, it's collapsing the zero, it's opening the zero, and as it does, it can rotate in an anti-clockwise direction, and that's why it's every other non-trivial zero in which we're hitting these zero points. And that's because the way that the Raymond constructed his fourth-dimensional plane was a kind of strange, slightly out of sync with the other numbers that are missing in the fourth-dimensional mathematic that aren't apparent. But once we put those other numbers in, which you can see by the angular, which we can see by with the function of zero squared, actually we get rid of the number I. And what happens is number I now gets reserved for something else we call 0 to the power of 3. Which generates the number I line, which we call the Z line. You can call it the I line. But you can also see what's happening then if you compare the two models between the fourth dimensional model, which does accommodate for the square root of one quite happily, by balancing it through the rotational function of squaring, that we do find that the Riemann zeta plane is distinctly divided just into two halves, whereas the fourth dimensional plane that we are suggesting is divided into a quadrature, which equals a quarter pi. So therefore, we've shown that through the pi solution, that that's how the plane is actually divided in the second dimension, not into half, as is the Riemann or the solution with the number I. And because of that very nature, what we have is an offset, and that offset creates all sorts of confusion. It stops also many things from happening. With the Mandelbrot set, it stops the formation of the second bulb on the other half. You might notice it's famous because it's got one bulb shooting out in one direction, and that's just the nature of negative squaring, which we overcome with the fourth dimensional mathematic, which will return. Obviously, once we use the fourth dimension, you'll see the other half returning, and also because you're halving of infinity there, what you will actually see is it will actually reflect equally in the four planes, and what you'll get is a perfect reflection of numerical number space. And what you are seeing there with the bulb is really just the pi function that is actually predicted in fourth dimensional space, so the squaring of zero. And what you're seeing in the center function there is what we call the one inside the one. So, you know, Mandelbrot is actually a very useful tool in from fourth dimensional mathematics once we overcome the number I, once we just adjust the mathematics slightly to become fourth dimensional. And what we will see is it will turn into a symmetrical four-way pattern. And that means we've got four-way symmetry, which means you will have a right angle at the center, which with which you can sort of investigate stuff. And we recenter the zero now back at the center of the number plane. When you look at the Riemann number plane, what you see is the zero is actually offset, which creates that distortion in the first place, and the number one is unified. So what they've actually done is they've kind of unified the number one, rather than what we've done is unified the number zero, and spaced the zero out with a number one in four locations around the zero, which we could call the cardinal numbers, if you like. We show that with the E function, the cardinals and the ordinals offset, and the minus one. So that shows you the function of the plane, of the fourth dimensional plane, and why it works extremely differently from the number I. It also solves the Riemann hypothesis. And as far as prime numbers go, we've got some information about some of that stuff as well, which will also shows you how powerful fourth dimensional mathematics is, because it gives us a new solution to primes. Okay, so that's a little bit on the square number code and the density of Aleph 0.5, and why the square root of 1 on the Riemann on the Riemann zeta plane, why it produces this offset, so every other non-zero, as they say, is apparent once we apply the function. Okay, thank you very much for listening. That's my solution to the Riemann hypothesis, or some of it. There'll be more solutions to the Riemann hypothesis coming soon. Stay tuned, and we'll get back to you. This has been Into Infinity, Colin Power, broadcasting the solutions to pi infinity, the square root of minus 1, the square root of 1, in fact, as well, and the Riemann hypothesis. Thank you very much for listening.